This is The Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio.
Way down upon the Swampy River, far, far away, there's where my heart is turning ever.
Hardtacks and friends here on The Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio and old folks at home. Merrick Bennett, I want to tell us a little bit about why you included this tune in the Songster collection.
Oh, my goodness. There's so many reasons. Well, for one thing, when Woody and I play this song as part of our New Hampshire Humanities Council presentation, Rally Round the Flag, listeners of a certain generation or two know this song by heart, and they sing along, and they just love this song. It brings tears to their eyes, and they all say, oh, I learned it in school back in the 30s, 40s, even in the 50s. But people younger than that don't know the song. And it's kind of interesting that a song becomes popular, is popular for 100 years, and then suddenly disappears because society has changed around it. And it has quite an interesting history to it, actually. So we were discussing just before we came into the studio, debating whether or not we should sing the original lyrics of the song or not.
Right, as written by Stephen Foster.
Right, Stephen Foster wrote it 1851, a time before the Civil War, 10 years before the war breaks out. And he wrote it for the minstrel stage, which was, I mean, basically it was a group of white guys from the cities in the North dressing up, painting their faces black and caricaturing African-American slaves on the plantations.
Show business.
Show business. It was tremendously popular. It had a run of over a century as sort of the most popular, one of the most popular entertainment forums for families, for all ages. So anyways, Stephen Foster writes this song, and it's kind of interesting what it says. We tell audiences you have to imagine being in New Hampshire in the 1850s. You maybe haven't left your town, maybe haven't left the state. Maybe you've traveled all around. People traveled all over the place. Maybe you've been across the country even. The country at that time was a lot smaller in many ways. But California's out there. Maybe you've been that far. But still, you go out for entertainment on an evening, and maybe you go to a minstrel show, and you hear this song. And it's just a beautiful song. Stephen Foster wrote these incredible melodies that that just tug on your heartstrings. And you see, you know that it's white people in blackface caricaturing another race, which, by the way, in the 1850s was considered, you know, the high point of humor. But you start to think, boy, you know, these people are singing about how happy they are on the plantation and how they wish they were back there. And, you know, like we ask when we do this with school groups, we ask them, is this an authentic voice, an authentic primary source text of what people on the plantations thought? And often when they first hear it, they say, yeah, okay, yeah, it is. And then you think about slavery and you think about the situations on the plantations and you think about, wait, who composed this song? Where was he from? Pittsburgh.
Right. A white singer-songwriter right. from the time.
And the song becomes much more interesting to us as in an ethnomusicological way, right? Because suddenly this is not just an innocent song showing what someone thought sometime. This is a song that's being used to do a certain work in society. So we're very aware of that, and we came in here saying, you know, maybe we should sing it the way it's listed on the state of Florida home site, because this is still the state song of Florida, the official state song of Florida. So there's a present, you know, these things don't go away and they stay with us. And they sing, I think they list it, they clean up the words, mm-hmm. right? It's still longing for my good old station and for the old folks at home. They take out the word plantation, and they also sing, oh, brothers, how my heart grows weary. And we were thinking maybe we should take it out and start the show without a racial slur. And I'm glad you encouraged us to stick with the original text.
Well, some people might not have caught that the chorus actually reads, all the world am sad and dreary, everywhere I roam, oh, darkies, how my heart grows weary, far from the old folks at home. So I think many of our listeners may never have really known what the chorus was.
Sure, and this is a lot of these songs were written in dialect, right?
Absolutely.
And that dialect would be understood. There were German dialect, there were Irish dialects, there were Negro dialects, that as they called it then. And it was understood, oh, this is somebody making fun of or putting on a character of. And it's a way of I think the reason we include this song and not another minstrel song is because the minstrel show is hugely important to understanding the Civil War, and it's the beginning of cultural exchanges between across racial lines that result in rock and roll and hip hop and jazz and everything in the 20th century, but Stephen Foster's genius is he takes that at that point early on in the minstrel show. It's very it's just offensive to us in the 21st century. But he also imbues it with this real humanity. I mean, we always ask our audience, after we talk about the horrors of slavery, we'll say, but is it possible that a slave could miss his or her family? An enslaved person could miss his or her family. Is it possible they could miss the place where they were born, where their family is? Is it possible they got separated from their family? Suddenly you see, oh, this song actually does fit into the narrative of slavery. And Stephen Foster was very aware of that as he made these songs. He was troubled by it initially. He didn't put his name on the song initially.
This is The Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio.
When you make your year-end gift to NHPR today, you'll be entered to win an iPad Air, Apple's latest generation of the tablet. It's a busy time of year to be sure, but we're only asking you to take a moment now to think about how much you use this 24-hour news service. Then, pay for what you use. Give us a call and get in on this and all our drawings this month at 1-888-805-NHPR or visit nhpr.org.
Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and TransCanada, generating and selling electricity and a proud supporter of the Northern Forest Center's work to advance thriving communities and healthy forests. Northernforest.org. And Dwelling in Possibility, a new book searching for the soul of shelter by Howard Mansfield. Specially signed book plates available for the holidays. Information at howardmansfield.com. And Ann Henderson Interiors, full-service interior design, creating the art of inside. Also featuring fine gifts and home decor, now at 99 Main Street, Keene, and online at ahinteriors.com. This is the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio, and our guest in the studio, the Hard Tacks. We're going to hear another tune, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about the Songster Project and about the Hard Tacks. This is NHPR. Patriotism, the Hard Tacks here in our studio on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. And Dixie, want to tell us about that, Merrick, and why you included it in your Songster collection?
Well, Dixie was, of course, written by Dan Emmett, who was...
From Ohio.
From Ohio.
Another singer-songwriter.
Yep, another northern singer-songwriter. another guy in the minstrel show. And he wrote the song in 1859. Just one weekend, he was playing with Bryant's Minstrels, and Mr. Bryant said, "We need a good song for Monday night. You know, the crowds are kind of thin, and we need something that people can walk out humming and whistling." So he worked all Sunday, came in Monday. They tried it in rehearsal. It was an instant hit, but not in a way that he really intended. because this song, the first two verses that we sang are part of his original lyrics. There was actually a first verse that his wife censored out because she felt it was too irreverent and irreligious. But those two verses, I mean, it's obviously, it's nonsense. Old Mrs. Mary Will the Weaver, Willie was a gay deceiver. But it catches on in the South. It catches on all over the place. But in the South especially, something about that chorus really gets people going. In Dixieland, we'll took our stand to live and die in Dixie.
Right. It's a rally.
It is a rally. Right. Yeah.
Although it was originally played a little more slowly, more like we played it, I think. Although there are no recordings from 1859. But it was played a little more slowly. But then at the very start of the war, at the inauguration of Confederate President Jefferson Davis, the band leader comes up with this peppy new arrangement that's more of a march that you can really march to and cover some ground. If you played it at that speed, you would your army wouldn't cover much ground in a day, right? But he plays a da 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 right? And that you can march to. And we know that because Jefferson Davis wrote him a thank you note saying, wow, cool new arrangement of that song. Right? And right at the start of the war, all through the war, actually, people in both the North and the South had this very mixed reaction to it. They both couldn't stand it in some ways. In the South, a lot of people were very bothered that this unofficial national anthem of the Confederate States was actually a nonsense song. Right.
Lincoln liked the tune.
Lincoln loved the tune, and he does say, you know, it is one of the best tunes I've ever heard.
Ooh.
Tune.
Mm-hmm.
Right. But people were bothered that why would this nonsense song catch on? And this minstrel show song, and minstrel show is considered very lowbrow entertainment because it is. It's offensive racist entertainment. Wasn't necessarily considered that by everybody. But in the North, there was this movement to show that Dixie was a Northern song, and there were all these attempts to prove that it wasn't really about the South. It was about it was all a misunderstanding. But it's clearly about the land below the Mason-Dixon line. So the interesting thing about Dan Emmett that I think of whenever I play this song or any of his other songs, because he wrote all these great songs for the minstrel show, he really regretted writing Dixie by the end of the war. Someone asked him, what do you think of your song now? And he said, if I knew the uses it would be put to and all the people who would march to it and never come home and the political uses it would be put to, I never would have written it.
This is the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio and our guests in the studio, the Hard Tax. Let's talk a little bit about the Hard Tax. How did the Hard Tax actually get started, folks?
This is Woody Pringle, and I like to play old-time music, music that was early American music before the Civil War. So this is some of the newer written music to me. And Merrick had this fantastic idea of let's get together and play some music from the Civil War. Initially, I was going to do the South, and you're going to do the North. And
I was playing New England contra dance music and tunes, fiddle tunes, and Woody was playing West Virginia music. And I thought, well, the Civil War is the North versus the South, so it's a two-sided. It'll be a two-sided concert, back and forth. Come to find out, you look at these songs, like we just said with Dixie, it's much more complicated than that.
Yeah. Well, Woody, you may know from his work with the Bradford Bog People. And what other projects have you been involved with, Woody, that folks may
Well,
know
I'm actually about? In another Civil War band down in Massachusetts. They're called the 12th Georgian. And that's fun, mostly reenactors as opposed to what we do as hard tax, which would be more along the humanity programs and the historical societies. I've had a few other endeavors going on, but right now they're being warehoused for the winter.
Okay, and what about you, Merrick? I know you've been involved with Big Paws, right? And you're also the a comic strip artist.
Yeah, a lot of our band members here, too, in the Hard Tax are from the Cold River Ranters, too. Mm-hmm. We should mention them as well. And I've been, for the past couple of years, I've been doing a lot of cartooning and comics work in communities in Eastern Europe and in New England. And, of course, as I dig into New England history, I'm finding myself fascinated by this time period and drawing a lot of comics about the New Hampshire towns and New Hampshire experience in the Civil War through my my Live Free and Draw project. Mm-hmm. And it's great because sometimes the letters you use or the diaries you use, they mention all the time, they mention stuff that these songs are addressing, or they'll mention some of the songs, and it's so cool to be working in what you think are two different creative realms, drawing things and playing music are very different, but then you start uncovering some of the same material, and that's been really exciting for me.
How long have the Hard Tacks been together?
2 years, I think.
Okay.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, we have quite a few Hard Tacks here. Maybe you'd like to introduce the band.
All right. So to my left, we have Doug Farrell and Andrew Cunningham, who also play lots of other instruments, but today for the radio show, they are our marching chorus. And over here on my right is Tom Weldon on the bones and jawbones and triangles, and you're going to hear a whole tool belt full of tools from him. All these tools that were easy to pick up and put in your pocket were very popular among the soldiers. Mm-hmm. And we have Miss Anita Carol Weldon on her boron and on her, you've heard her so far, on her washboard also. And she has an accordion. Whenever possible, we play period instruments. So I've got my 1856 William Boucher style fretless banjo. So you'll hear a lot of... It's got a neck a lot more like a cello or a fiddle, flat like a guitar neck, but fretless, so that you really have to pay a little attention and find those pitches. But they're really expressive. And what he plays is an old fiddle that hasn't changed much in the past 200 years, right?
We've got the Hard Tacks in the studio here on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. Support for NHPR comes from you, our members, and Lutheran Social Services, Good News Garage, accepting, repairing, and providing reliable vehicles to families in need. Donate a car, change a life at goodnewsgarage.org. And R.H. Irving Home Builders, specializing in deep energy retrofits using proven passive house principles to increase comfort and sustainability. Details at rhirvinghomebuilders.com. The Hard Tacks are our guests in the studio on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. How about another tune?
All right, we'll do another one more song from the minstrel show stage, but this one comes from 1862, so it's the middle of the war, and we'll put you on the spot here, Kate, and we'll see what you notice. How has the minstrel show idiom changed from I wish I was back on the old plantation to something very different by 1862? This is called Kingdom Coming by Henry Clay Work.
Broken, but the mass will have his pay. He's on the
definitely a change of tone from the previous minstrel tunes that you were talking about, Merrick, and that one called Dixie Kingdom Coming here on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. That was just great. I just love that transition.
Well, it's quite striking, you're right, because by 1862, there were a lot of Union forces in the field in the South. There were some periods of 1862 where Southern forces were in the field in the North, too. But there were this song, we pair it with General Butler's letter from Fort Monroe in occupied South Carolina. And he writes this really amazing letter that I guess it was an open letter in the New York Times. It's on their website. Who knew they had a website back then? But he writes this amazing letter to the Secretary of War saying, you know, we have a lot of slaves, former slaves, coming across the military lines, entering this Union fortress for the protection of the U.S. Army. And he uses this term contraband, which normally would be what you capture in battle, right? If you capture a fort or you capture a stand of arms or something. And these are people. But remember, under the Constitution at that time, they're property. Because the U.S. Constitution, from its inception, included certain people as property, African Americans, although it's very careful about how it words that. So in a lot of these regions, just like the song says, the plantation owners would leave. And in the diaries and journals of Colonel Higginson, he says one of the former slaves told him, you know, the plantation owners, they're not running from you Northern soldiers. They're running from us. Because a lot of the population in those sea islands and in the coast of South Carolina was, it was 15 to 1, the ratio of slaves to free white landed plantation owner families, which is pretty frightening if you have lived by the whip, as those plantation owners did. And I mean, this is also called the Year of Jubilo because suddenly the people, even the overseer has disappeared, and the plantation owners have disappeared, and suddenly you're left really to fend for yourself. And suddenly there are these Northern soldiers in the region. And could have gone a lot of ways. Their legal status of these former slaves was really up in the air. But a lot of them went to the Union Army and offered to help. A lot of them said, you know, give me tools, I can dig. Give me a weapon. Mm-hmm. Frederick Douglass was arguing from very early on in the war to arm the black volunteers. And the U.S. government did not want to do that. Mm-hmm. That was political dynamite for a number of reasons.
The hard tacks are taking us back to the Civil War era here on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. The hard tacks, where did you get the idea for the name the hard tacks?
Well, it's actually food, and Merrick made some up, and we brought you some over here.
Okay, it's snack.
Yeah, they last forever. That was the main staple, I guess, right?
Well, isn't there a song in the songster, the hard tacks never come again, something like that, right?
Well, that's, sure, yeah.
That's maybe a play on the fact that they're not going to eat hard tack anymore.
I found in John D. Billings' book, Hard Tack and Coffee, which is a wonderful glimpse into the camp life of, a Union artilleryman. And he mentions early on in the war, very early on, they had already converted Hard Times Come Again No More to Let us pause our game of poker, take our tin cups in our hands, whilst we all gather round the cook's tent door, as dried mummies of hard crackers are given to each man. Oh, hard crackers come again no more. And then everybody would join in. 'Tis the song, the sigh of the hungry. Hard crackers, come again no more. Many days you have lingered upon our stomachs sore. Oh, hard crackers, come again no more. And you can imagine that song. You heard how it spread here,
sure.
Right? And we actually don't usually perform that one very much. So you hear how it spread here, and imagine 1,000 people singing that as they approach the cook's tent.
Yeah, that's a little song protest, I'd say.
So we brought you some to try.
Thank you. I can't wait. The hard tacks are our guests in the studio on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. You've been pretty busy. I know you've done some shows out around New Hampshire. Where where else have your travels taken the hardtacks?
Well, we're fortunate where we have many opportunities, whether we're playing historical societies through the Humanities Council or doing it directly, such as a fundraiser to help maybe an organization. We've also ventured into school systems to provide what we're doing here. When we go into a site, we show images from the Library of Congress, you know, so it's all authentic, and as well images from the Civil War time, as well as the songs we're singing now. The actual song sheets are projected as well for learners of all ages. We've been over to Vermont to play in schools down in Connecticut. We had an interesting experience back in the spring. We were in Windsor, Connecticut, at a middle school doing a two-day artist residency. We worked with over 220 eighth graders, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And they loved it. And then afterwards, we taught them songs and talked about the history. The history professor, or teacher in that case, really enjoyed it. He was thrilled. Then we brought them all together on day two in an auditorium, if you can imagine, 220 eighth graders and their teachers and some relatives. And we had them all singing. And they loved it. It was amazing.
I want you to play another tune, folks, and then come back and talk a little bit about this other project, which it must have been a project to create the Songster publication. So it's a beautiful publication. I want to talk about that some more. But first, how about another tune, Merrick? What are you going to play for us?
Well, we'll do another song out of the Hardtack Civil War Songster. We'll do one from the early months of the war, and it'll be clear what part of the country this comes from. One, two, three, and...
Are a band of brothers, natives of the soil, fighting for the property we've gained by honest toil. And when our rights were threatened, the cry rose near and far, to raise on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Hurrah!
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 For Southern rights, hurrah!
Hurrah!
For the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star.
Long as the Union was faithful to our trust, like friends and like brothers, both kind we were and just. But now when Northern treachery attempts our rights to mar, we'll hoist on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Singing hurrah,
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 hurrah, for Southern rights, hurrah,
hurrah,
for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star.
South Carolina nobly made a stand, and then came Alabama and took her by the hand. Next quickly Mississippi, Georgia, and Florida, all raised on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star. Singing hurrah,
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 for Southern rights, hurrah,
hurrah,
for the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star.
Men of valor gather round the banner of the right, cause Texas and Louisiana join us in the fight. With Stevens as our president, with Stevens statesman rare, we'll hoist on high the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star.
Hurrah!
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 The Southern rights, hurrah!
Hurrah!
For the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star.
Hurrah!
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 The Southern rights, hurrah!
Hurrah!
For the bonnie blue flag that bears a single star.
Well, you can almost hear people singing that today, can't you?
Well.
Bonnie Blue Flag, the name of that tune here on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio, performed by the Hardtacks in our studio.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned that, because we actually came across the series of recordings at UC Santa Barbara. I think they have this collection of Edison wax cylinders, and they actually have some 1909, 1910 recordings of a Confederate veteran named Polk Miller and his Southern Quartet singing that song, and he sang it the way that they sang it in the trenches. The other interesting thing about him is his Southern Quartet was four African-American gentlemen who sang with him. So it's a fascinating, that's a whole other story, what happens after the war, and how integration and civil rights continue to be an issue that music addresses and that the arts address.
The Hard Techs have produced the Civil War Songster. You want to tell us a little bit about this project?
Sure. Well, you know, we realized we had this growing stack of song sheets that we were working with because our whole program is based on primary source documents. That's a big, as an educator, I'm very aware with the Common Core standards that are coming in all the schools now. Primary source documents are huge because you want to get students, you want to get everybody in contact with these documents that represent views of people who were there and witnessed the history, right? So these song sheets are, it turns out there was this revolution in printing just before the Civil War that enabled the common people, whether they're soldiers or whether they're families at home, to, I think of it sort of like a social network from the 19th century. If you have a song that you really like, you could purchase for very cheap a song sheet that for a couple pennies, and you could send it to a family member from far away, or you could send it to home if you were in the service. And so these things become, I think of it as a social network because it's a way, it's like sharing things. The concept of passing it around, everybody learns the song. If you like the song, you're going to sing along with the song. And so you can sort of, without technology in place, you can see how people share these ideas. And the ones that are really popular, the best-selling ones, we interpret as meaning ones that really meant something for people. So this one, Bonnie Blue Flag, is fascinating because it reminds us that, you know, it's very reductionist to think of the Civil War as North versus South, freedom versus slavery. Because, I mean, who wants to go off and fight a war in favor of slavery? That's not why Confederate soldiers, they weren't fighting to take people's rights away. Well, maybe some of them were. Mm-hmm. But by and large, they weren't slave owners, right? But what they thought, the way they thought of it was, it's right here in this song. We are a band of brothers, natives of the soil. So we were born here. We're not immigrants. That was very important in the 1840s and 50s because there was a huge wave of immigration coming from outside the country. For the people who sang this song, that meant something. Fighting for our property we gained by honest toil. And what did they mean by property? Mm-hmm. All the types of property that the Constitution initially allowed. And in this case, in the case of the Civil War, we're talking about property in the form of slaves. But when our rights were threatened, a cry rose near and far, right? A northern treachery is what threatens them. The northern treachery of possibly wanting to change the Constitution. That's why they were willing to go and fight for the right to secede. And you're right, these sorts of sentiments they're still with us today and being talked about today.
What I loved about the songster, you also included the reply to Bonnie Blue Flag, which was the Patriots' response to the song. So they say, we are a land of patriots who each have home and friend, our noble constitution and banner to defend. Our capital was threatened and the cry rose near and far, protect the glorious old flag glittering with many a star. Hurrah, hurrah for free men's rights, hurrah. So you're absolutely right. It is kind of almost like a little comment page in the our favorite state newspaper or something. You can have a conversation through music about the rights of man. I just want to talk a little bit more about the Songster Collection that have both of you participated, Woody and Merrick, in collecting all of these tunes?
It's pretty much Merrick's project as far as finding all the actual song sheets and putting them together here in this handy-dandy book, which is good, and it's a lot better than making all the copies of the songs to bring into a school or program.
And it's nice you have a chronology, too, so you have the index, and it's it's indexed by year. So you can actually, it makes it a little easier to follow the track of the war and the times through song. So what do you think Stephen Foster got for his tunes?
What did he get in terms of money?
Yeah.
Well, he gave a lot of his early ones. You think of his big ones, Oh Susanna, I think Oh Lemuel, a lot of the ones. Well, I'm looking in the index.
When you think about singer-songwriters, you know.
Angelina Baker, Camp Town Races, mm-hmm. Hard Times Come Again No More. Nellie Bly, Oh Susanna, Ring Ring the Banjo, all his early ones he gave away to publishers trying to establish his name. And they were huge hits, but he didn't see any money from them.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of his later songs that were big hits, he had a real tough situation at home. And he struggled with alcoholism, basically. So he was selling the advance royalties of his songs to publishers, and which, of course, you don't sell for a very good price. And he really died almost penneless.
The Hard Tacks are in our studio on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. A great way to spend a snowy Sunday. Hope you're enjoying our program tonight. What will we hear now?
Well, we'll sing a spiritual that comes from the 1850s, maybe the 1860s, by Wallace Willis, who was a former slave in the South and ended up a Choctaw free man out in Oklahoma. A lot of people, when we do our shows, we found a lot of people know this song in different versions. It's called Swing Low, Sweet Chariot. Swing low, sweet chariot.
Come for to carry me home.
Swing low, sweet chariot.
Come for to carry me home.
When I looked toward Jordan, and what did I see?
Coming for to carry me home.
But a band of angels are coming after me.
Coming for to carry me home.
Swing low,
swing low,
sweet chariot.
Coming for to carry me home.
Swing low,
swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home.
Well, I'm sometimes up and I'm sometimes down.
Coming for to carry me home.
But still my soul feels a heaven bound.
Coming for to carry me home.
Swing low,
swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home.
Swing low,
swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home.
Well, that River Jordan is muddy and cold.
Coming for to carry me home.
It chills the body but not the soul.
Coming for to carry me home.
Swing low,
swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to
carry me home. Swing low,
swing low, sweet chariot. Coming for to carry me home.
Really important piece of the Civil War era, and that's all those spirituals that we know, and many folks know them but don't know the origin of those tunes. So thank you for doing that one. Swing Low, Sweet Chariot from the Hard Tacks here on the Folk Show at New Hampshire Public Radio. What next for the Hard Tacks?
Well, we'll be posting our spring and summer season for 2014 on our website pretty soon. That's www.civilwarfolkmusic.com. And we'll be doing, we have some residencies, and we have a lot of New Hampshire Humanities Council performances. We love to hear from towns, historical societies, libraries. We can come in and visit as a duo. Woody and I come and do discussions and sing-alongs, or we'll come in and work in schools and practice the songs with students and have discussions about them. And then we can come and do a concert as a 5, 6, 7, 8 piece group with all our different instruments and really bring it to life. So
yeah, it's a hoot.
it really is. That's the thing about this music. In a time before mechanically reproduced music, all these songs come down to us through the years, partly because they're just really fun to sing with people. And they teach you so much about what people believed at this time. So that's our project, bringing these songs back to life in the towns where they were sung during the Civil War, here in New Hampshire and around New England. And who knows where we'll get in 2014.
Right, no limits.
We've got a lot of target places we want to visit down south, too.
Now, if anyone wanted to get a copy of The Songster, is that available on your website as well?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, civilwarfolkmusic.com. You'll see you can. We actually are in the midst of recording instrumental tracks for every tune in The Songster. So the idea is you can put it on play or put it on repeat and just sing the music along with your friends or your family or your classroom. Ideally, you could just sing it a cappella or play it on whatever instruments you had, because that's how these songs were sung.
Isn't that great?
You can find the book on the website, and you can listen to the music too on the website. You can download the music to go with your book. We try to make it easy for you.
And we'll be taking a picture of the hardtacks, and you'll see that on our website. And visit their website. Again, it's CivilWarFolkMusic.com for a copy of the Songster or to find out where the hardtacks will be appearing. This is NHPR. Thanks to the hardtacks for stopping by on a snowy Sunday. And wishing you all the best. One final tune.
We like to end with this one. It's from early on in the war, but it really gets at what a lot of what we feel is going on in this piece of our nation's history. It's called Battle Hymn of the Republic by Mrs. Julia Ward Howe.
Has seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. He is trampling out the vintage where the grapes of wrath are stored. He hath loosed the fateful lightning of his terrible swift sword. His truth is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Fires of 100 circling camps, they have builded him an altar in the evening dews and dams. I can read his righteous sentence by the dim and flaring lamps. His day is marching on. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Crush the serpent with his heel, since God is marching on.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah.
His truth is marching on. He hath sounded forth the trumpet that shall never call retreat. He is sifting out the hearts of men before his judgment seat. Oh, be swift, my soul, to answer him. Be jubilant, my feet. Our God is marching on.
Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. Glory, glory, hallelujah. His truth is marching.
In the beauty of the lilies, Christ was born across the sea, with a glory in his bosom that transfigures you and me. As he died to make men holy, let us die to make men free. His truth is marching on.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.